Tomorrow marks the 100th anniversary of the worst peacetime maritime disaster in history. Over 1,500 people died when RMS Titanic, a ship touted as unsinkable, plunged to the bottom of the ocean after striking an iceberg. The event was followed by investigations on both sides of the Atlantic and led to changes in maritime safety procedures and the use of communications technology. The story has captivated the imaginations of generations since, spawning endless books, articles and films, most notably Walter Lord's 1955 book A Night to Remember and James Cameron's 1997 blockbuster and multiple Academy Award-winning film. Now, as area institutions mount exhibitions to commemorate the event and highlight its Philadelphia connections, WRTI's Susan Lewis takes another look at the Titanic and its legacy.
That the story of the Titanic has captivated so many is hardly surprising. It has all the elements of Greek drama. Human arrogance and folly played out on a majestic setting, an opulent and massive passenger vessel over 100 feet high and more than 850 feet long, with 11 decks, multiple dining rooms, promenades, a gymnasium, a squash court, and a swimming pool. On board were 2,224 people, a cross-section of humanity, from the wealthy elite in first class to second and third class passengers, among them emigrants hoping for a better life in America, and a crew drawn in large part from the slums around the docks in Southampton, England, like Henry Allen, a relative of Philadelphia area resident Howard Callender.
I guess he felt he was pretty lucky getting a job on the Titanic, this amazing new ship.
Great hopes dashed by terrible tragedy, followed by recriminations and accusations, all the stuff of Hollywood. But it's also a story that for some, like Howard Callender, is personal.
So growing up, my grandmother had now and again mentioned an Uncle Henry who died on the Titanic. Henry Allen, he was a 32-year-old stoker.
I had heard about William Carter's escape. Uncle Billy, he was called.
Carter Leidy's grandmother's brother was William Carter, a first-class passenger traveling with his wife and two children, all of whom survived. Also in first class were Charlotte Cardiza, a philanthropist from Germantown who was traveling with her son Thomas. Mrs. Cardiza was a cousin of area resident Dave Linfoot.
She was my great-grandmother's cousin, descended from the English explorer Sir Francis Drake. Mrs. Cardiza had the largest insurance claim on the ship at $175,000 because they were bringing back many of their big game hunting trophies from Africa and Hungary. When the Titanic went down, they collected into Lifeboat 3, and apparently both of them took turns helping row the lifeboat.
The lifeboats, 16 large wooden and 4 collapsible boats, were not enough to hold every person on board, but were also not expected to be necessary, even after the ship struck the iceberg, according to the memoir of survivor Richard Norris Williams, a 21-year-old tennis player returning home with his father to Philadelphia's main line from a tournament in France. Williams' diary reflects a sense of calm and an expectation of rescue, even as lifeboats were launching from the various decks, with a call for women and children to be first, although a number of men were recruited to row the boats. Another ship's lights could be seen in the distance, and at first, there was little sign of damage visible from the deck. The memoir is part of the collection of the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, where Richard Norris Williams later served as president, and is now on display at the Rosenbach Museum and Library in an exhibition exploring the impact of the tragedy on several Philadelphians. Historical Society President Kim Sayet reads Williams' account of what happened that night.
Her mere size gave us confidence. Even if the improbable happened and she did eventually sink, why, she would float for at least 12 or 15 hours. There was no use in worrying.
To pass the time, Williams and his father went to the gym and rode the exercise bikes. Elsewhere on the ship, the band famously played on. Eventually, the two men went up to the officer's deck to talk to the captain, and danger became apparent.
We spoke to the captain for a few minutes. The ship seemed to give a slight lurch. I turned towards the bow. I saw nothing but water with just a mast sticking out of it. I don't remember the shock of the cold water, but I only remember thinking suction and my efforts to swim in the direction of the starboard rail to get away from the ship.
Titanic was beginning its dive.
I yelled to my father, "Quick, jump." He started towards me just as I saw one of the four great funnels come crashing down on top of him. Just for one instant, I stood there transfixed. Not because it had only missed me by a few feet, this did not even occur to me. Curiously enough, not because it had killed my father, for whom I had a fairer than normal feeling of love and attachment, but there I was, transfixed, wondering at the enormous size of the funnel, still belching smoke.
William swam to a life raft and was among those rescued. 27-year-old Harry Widener was not so lucky, but may have had the same expectations that things would be all right. He and his father had also stayed behind after his mother and her maid got into a lifeboat. Family friend and book dealer Dr. Abraham Rosenbach, a close confidant of Mrs. Widener, wrote a memoir about Harry several months after his death. In it, he recounted the story of Harry's last conversation with his mother, about a rare book of essays by Francis Bacon he had bought on his travels. Rosenbach librarian Elizabeth Fuller.
And in that memoir, he reported that as the ship was sinking, Harry said to his mother, "I've put the book in my pocket. Little Bacon goes with me." That's not a tragic story. That's a very hopeful story.
Harry and his father died, but there was some confusion immediately after the disaster.
Newspapers were publishing only a couple times a day, but the Telegraph made reports very, very quick. And the moment somebody thought they knew something or somebody said something, it was telegraphed to the newspapers. And there were so many people involved and so many people desperate for information that all kinds of stories got out before they could be verified.
In accordance with Harry's plans to donate books to Harvard, Dr. Rosenbach worked with Mrs. Widener to build a book collection to be housed in a new library at the university. Harry's body was never found. Many of the bodies that were recovered were taken to Nova Scotia. Howard Callender has found details about his great-uncle on a website about Titanic victims.
Mr. Henry Allen, 32, was born in Hampshire, England. He was married to Cecilia and had seven children. His body was recovered by the Mackay Bennett and was buried at Fairview Cemetery, Halifax, Nova Scotia, on 8th of May, 1912. His clothing at the time was a blue coat and vest, striped trousers, dungaree trousers, grey trousers. He had a lot of trousers on. And this all comes from the White Star Line's record of bodies and effects for passengers and crew.
So many were lost, survivors suffered as well. Rumors that one young man had disguised himself with a shawl to get into a lifeboat as a woman cast aspersions on every male survivor, says Carter Leidy.
To have been a man to survive that accident with that kind of a rumor going around, it must have been quite difficult for any man to have looked people in the face and not have to do some fast talking about how the conditions surrounding their survival.
The sinking shocked communities on both sides of the Atlantic.
The city of Southampton was devastated. I mean, so many people who lived there died on the ship.
Writer Joseph Conrad railed about the sinking in essays, a couple of which are on display at the Rosenbach. Elizabeth Fuller says he blasted the engineers and the company
for having built a ship that was too large to manage. So the bigger a ship is, the more delicately it has to be handled. And he felt that they created an impossible job for the sailors and then blamed the sailors who died for being unable to do their jobs.
Hearings were held in England and America, where Carter Leidy's great-uncle William Carter testified in defense of the White Star chairman, J. Bruce Ismay, with whom he had escaped in one of the last lifeboats after no more women and children appeared on the deck.
Ismay was called before Congress to testify. It seemed to be necessary to rise to his defense.
With a scenario where so many things had gone wrong, accusations and questions were many, with blame flung in different directions. Did the Titanic recklessly speed through an ice field? Why were lifeboats inadequate and so many launched half full? Why did distress signals go unanswered when a nearby ship, the Californian, was close enough to come to Titanic's aid? In the aftermath of the tragedy, changes were made to maritime procedures, among them a requirement of sufficient lifeboats. The Radio Act of 1912 required, among other things, that ship radio operators must be on duty 24 hours a day. And questions continue A recent New York Times article speculates about the weather conditions creating a mirage that may have confused officers on the Titanic and the nearby Californian. But Titanic's lessons go beyond the science and the law books.
I really do feel that it was a terrible human loss and a terribly shocking and dramatic thing, which I feel very personally. And I think as I see our technology today, I just can't help but think. Sometimes we get into situations where we have popular delusions about how far our technology can be relied upon. And I think for me, the main story of the Titanic is that.
Crew member Henry Allen's descendant, Howard Callender, recently took his family on a road trip to visit his great-uncle Henry's grave in Nova Scotia.
For the children, I think it's important to understand that not everyone is as lucky as we are, that we have a house, we have jobs, we have food on the table. That is clearly not the lifestyle that Henry Allen and his family had. Much, much tougher. So it's good for them, my kids, to learn how difficult it is for some people and the sacrifices they're prepared to make.
The story of Titanic is more than a historical milestone, more than fodder for movies, television, and books. It puts a face on history, thousands of faces actually, ordinary people, rich and poor, caught in extraordinary circumstances, people whose lives and deaths have shaped how we live, what we think about, and who we are today.
WRTI's Susan Lewis. Tomorrow, the Rosenbach Museum and Library in Philadelphia, along with the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, will host a reading from materials in the exhibition Titanic, The Rise of Rosenbach at the Rosenbach Museum and Library in Philadelphia through December. The exhibition Titanic Philadelphians is at the Independent Seaport Museum through December 31st. An exhibition about the Titanic tragedy's impact on local families is at Widener University in Chester, PA through May 14th.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.